Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. South Dakota farmers have been receiving payments from the federal government to cover losses incurred as a result of the current trade war with China to the tune of more than $19 million. In a feature article on South Dakota Newswatch, they can find it online at sdnewswatch.org, Bart Fancook writes that according to an ag industry official, the assistance is just a Band-Aid that won't cover financial losses from the market disruption. Joining us now with a look into his investigative report is South Dakota Newswatch's Bart Fancook. He joins us from the Black Hills Surgical Hospital studio in Rapid City. Bart, welcome back to In the Moment. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me back.
Let's look at some of the numbers in this report, because you know where most of us are aware about of the trade battles or the back and forth between the Trump administration and really the world, but especially China. And part of the plan was that South Dakota soybean farmers and hog producers, for example, would probably take a hit, and the federal government would be here to help. So how is some of that money coming into the state? Break down some of the numbers. Who's it going to? How much are people getting?
You bet. And that's one thing that getting these numbers allowed us to do was really get a window into agricultural production and the scale of how things work. But about 2,900 farmers across South Dakota received the payments. Overall in South Dakota, there's about 46,000 producers on 32,000 farms. So it's a small amount of farmers who received the help. The average payment was about $6,600. But 90% of the payments were less than $20,000, and 70% or so less than $5,000. To see how these payments actually, it gets a little silly almost, but wheat and corn farmers really were virtually, they didn't get much help here. 1,220 were less than $1,000, and 250 farmers got less than $100. So we're not talking about big money here to offset the losses that particularly on a family farm or a small venture were pretty significant. So that's why I think Scott Vanderwall of the Farm Bureau Federation called it just a Band-Aid, because the losses hit very hard for those two industries in particular.
Let's put that into context, because farmers might have challenges really storing the harvest right now, trying to figure out where it might go in the future. Meanwhile, the income from it is very low. How does that affect the entire operation of a family farm?
Well, there's certainly a financial element and an emotional element to it. When you talk to these farmers, they sit around sort of, and your last guest mentioned this, that there's so many things out of their control. Right. A couple of good examples in the piece, a Bryant soybean farmer, Leonard Kopman, he said that he and his wife, now they run a pretty sizable farm with about 8 employees, losses about $700,000 due to the loss of the Chinese market. They received a $228,000 payment as a couple, really the highest in the state, but 228 over 700,000 lost. That's not going to cut it, as you could see. You do the math on that, it's not very positive. With the product waiting around, they're waiting for new markets to be established. There's no expectation, really, that the Chinese market's going to come back and all of a sudden. There just isn't a feeling in the industry that that's going to happen. So you've got all this product sitting around, and they're trying to develop South Korea as a market, for example. Well, that takes a lot of time and energy and effort. And so what do you do for 2019? Do you do a full planting? Do you buy a full seed, a contingent of seed? So those are some of the things that you're sort of sitting around waiting while, politicians and the Trump administration in particular are sort of, they've drawn a line and they're standing at it. And there is real no real clear answer here for what to do next year. And so it does, it puts a lot of pressure on an already stressed industry.
Who is it hitting the hardest? Is it the younger farmers, the larger farmers, smaller farmers? As you look at the numbers, who seems to be struggling the most with the current trade climate in spite of federal payouts?
Yeah, I asked Vanderwall that question, and he said, younger farmers in particular, and younger family farmers. Not a lot of capital built up. A lot of money extended into planting and capital that's been spent on machinery. So you're really far extended in your credit, and you know, you spend money to make money as a farmer. So you've spent that money to make the money and it doesn't come in. How long can your reserves last? Now, a more established family farm or a farm where there's a partnership, a little bit more able to withstand that. But he also mentioned that there are some people who, for one reason or another, could be a very wet spring or a couple of bad years. They just didn't get the harvest that they had planned on. They could be in kind of a slippery position, he called it. And those are the ones, the farms that would be at risk, actually, of going bankrupt. I did point out in the piece there was another little element of news that broke while I was working on it, and that was that the Minneapolis Federal Reserve Bank did a study and showed that there were 84 farms that went bankrupt in the states that include North Dakota, South Dakota. There wasn't a lot of them in South Dakota, but there was a good number, and that just shows, I think, how farming is such a difficult business to begin with, and you throw something like this at them, and it's really painful.
And that number is more than double what it was in 2014.
That's right.
So to put that number into context, is this, you know, are we looking at one-time payouts? Is this a plan going forward? What comes next?
Well, as early as today, Ag Secretary Sonny Perdue was expected or anticipated to make an announcement about a second round of payments, probably at the same rate. Many of the this round of payments was based on a multiplier that was figured out to allow for calculating the payment based on half of your productivity of the commodity that was impacted. So they're anticipating that, you know, it could be the second half of your whatever you grew, so you could get the same payment over again. There is an expectation that there should be another payment. President Trump said, well, let's do the first one at a half rate and see how things go, and if they're improving, maybe we won't need it. Well, there hasn't been any improvement, so I think the expectation is that there will be another round of payments.
Let's talk about the consequences of some of this. So, you know, people's are learning what exactly is happening on the family farm in South Dakota. But then let's talk about how it impacts them if they live in Rapid City or Sioux Falls. So the economy, the state economy, for one thing, takes a hit. And then broaden that conversation, because some people say this is a pretty significant national security issue. How come?
Well, that argument is made often. And I did pose this question. As a reporter, you have to ask the question that no one really wants to answer. But, you know, well, if my family suffers a loss, why would, you know, I don't get a bailout? Well, that's where this topic of where our food is grown and how America is self-reliant on the agricultural industry. And that makes it, you know, a security issue. If foreign interests took over our farm, farms, prices could go up. You could also introduce the potential for some kind of a terrorist action that could be politically motivated. So that's why they look at these payments as necessary to protect the industry and also individual families. But really, overall, that it is looked on as a national security issue. I can say that when you talk to these individual farmers, they all have their own way of doing things and balancing things out over the year so they make money. But, you know, I talked to a hog farmer, and to make a profit on a hog, it's about $110 price per head. And so they were getting $130 to $140, and he sells mostly to Smithfield and Sioux Falls. Well, they lost $70,000 on when the prices went below to $60 or $70. So break even $110, you're getting $60 to $70, $40 to $50 a hog that you've already invested that money to raise that pig, and you're not getting that money. So, you know, imagine sitting there and seeing, imagine taking a 30 or 40% pay cut, and how do you live?
And I'm not 100% sure I'm comfortable with the word bailout in this context, because, you know, 98% of the market disappears because of federal action and the federal government sends money, you know, and relief. That seems, that feels more like part of an overall political strategy from an administration than it does, you know, a bailout.
Yeah, I think it's just a
tough
bailout.
Word. Yeah.
Yeah. I, you know, it's not technically a subsidy either,
right,
in the regard where you would be paid just for doing something. I mean, it's considered a bailout because it had, you know, and if that has a negative connotation, I guess I understand that. I'm not sure how else to phrase that. But yeah, basically, through no actions of their own, You know,
right.
And that's what really this money is intended to do. I will say that the corn and wheat farmers in South Dakota, they're very much on the low end. I mean, some of them receiving less than $10 because the payment amount was 1 cent per bushel. Well,
I'm chuckling because I can imagine when that check comes, some of the things people do with that money just, to sort of make a statement in their own family about that $10 bailout from the government.
I know it seems so governmental in some respects that, you know, what does it cost to make that direct deposit? Most of these are through direct deposit, but sure. I did talk to one farmer who only got $2 and he's like, well, you know, you apply and see what happens. But he did say, yeah, I can't even buy a hamburger for that. So,
so talk about the politics of this, because most of the farmers and producers we've spoken to, South Dakota weighed heavily for President Trump in the election, and they've been supportive and have said they're willing to be patient. Are they still supportive and patient, or is their patience wearing thin because this is a pretty urgent situation on the farm?
You know, I think the support for Trump and the Trump administration is still there in the agricultural community. The individuals I talk to, they say, well, we were being taken advantage of in the steel and aluminum market. And that's really what kicked this off, was the tariffs that the president put on steel and aluminum. And then China retaliated with its own tariffs on agriculture. And they knew going into the campaign, I mean, he campaigned on a tough trade policy. And so I think there's an understanding that this is who he is and this is his strategy. And we may not like it, but I don't think that, I think they see the reasons for it and our support remain supportive. There is a hesitancy now when you speak to them and ask them if they still support Trump and his policies, but they do. But I think the caveat is growing as time goes on, because, you know, this is having such a big impact on a livelihood that took them years and often decades to develop.
South Dakota's congressional delegation promoted this aid. How are they reacting to the news that it's falling short here at home?
You know, Senators Thune and Rounds sent a letter to the president last week, basically urging him to make this a top priority. They were very respectful in the letter, and they want this resolved, and they see what's happening, you know, back home. They do note in the letter, if this continues, if this Chinese market can't be brought back, they don't think it'll ever come back. That China is already working feverishly to, and is buying from other sources, other nations. And I think what you could read between the lines, and actually it's stated fairly overtly by Senator Thune and Rounds, that this market's not coming back, and we need to solve this quickly, whether it's reopening the market a little or establishing new markets for these products, particularly soybeans, which was the vast majority of the payments that went out. And also that China was, you know, is 60% of the American soybean crop is sent to China. About a third of South Dakota's beans are sent there. So I think that sending this letter was sort of maybe just a nudge to, you know, stay on this aggressively and try to get this situation resolved.
So, Bart, if a family farm in South Dakota files for bankruptcy, can it be bought by a Chinese conglomerate?
You know, I'm going to have to plead ignorance on that. I don't like to speak about things that I haven't researched or
it's an interesting question, though, isn't it? I don't know the answer either. Let's find out, because that would be something that would feed into that national security conversation. Who can come in and take over that if the family local farmers are struggling?
Well, some people would argue that that's happened to an extent already with contract farming. But, Vanderwall said that 98% of American farms continue to be family owned. There may be, you know, hogs that are farrowed elsewhere and brought in, but that the ownership of the land and the operation itself tends to be family, still family operated. And I have seen that even concentrated animal feeding operations for hogs. They may have contracts with Smithfield or other companies like that, but they're still a husband and wife there, and often the children working on the property. So you see that, you still see the vast majority of farms being family operated.